Welcome in, podcast listeners, Tuesday edition of the Outkick the Coverage podcast, my final show that I'll be doing in Los Angeles till I get back to Nashville. Back on Wednesday, we have got a loaded show for you. Let me run through exactly who we're going to talk to. Alex Marvez in hour one on the NFL. John Morosi on the Major League Baseball All-Star Game and the first half of the season in hour two. And then my guy Jason Martin swings by and hangs out with us in hour three. All that still to come. Also encourage you, go download and listen to my latest Wins and Losses podcast interviews. There are six of them. I think you will love all of them. But for now, here's the Tuesday edition of Outkick the Coverage. Enjoy.
Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Welcome in, coming to you live from the Geico Outkick Studios. I'm Jason Martin, used to be the executive producer of this show, now the host of the Jason Martin Show on Fox Sports Radio, a daily host in Nashville on Fox Sports Radio affiliate WGFX 104.5 The Zone. And Clay Travis is still in L.A. for one more day. This lengthy celebration, Clay, for Lock It In Season 1, which comes to an end. Look, a lot of shows don't get a second season. So I said this kind of flippantly last night, just got one word in and said congratulations, but you guys have done 180 shows, and you should be proud of that. That's pretty damn impressive, honestly.
Yeah, well, look, we had a lot of fun. I've been out here now for 10 days. I'm flying back basically as soon as I finish the show this morning. I got an early morning flight to come back to Nashville. I'll be back in my usual Nashville studio on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. But I've had an incredible time out in L.A. I mean, the double earthquakes, Kawhi with the metaphorical earthquake and his decision to go join the Clippers. And we closed out the show yesterday for season one. Now, we'll be back in August. But for people who don't like me, I took about 30 pies in the face live on television yesterday for being the worst gambler in the season. If you haven't watched our show, we have a really, really fun time, whether it is me, Cousin Sal, Rachel Bonetta, or Todd Furman. And we will all be back in August. We don't know the exact return date, but I got a little bit nervous. I'm going to be honest with you. When I came onto the lot yesterday morning early to get ready for the show, and we have a, for people who live out in L.A., if you drive by the outside of the Fox lot at the intersection of Pico and Motor, we have a, there was a billboard with our pictures on it. And early, I got an email and a text message from somebody inside, and also then Sal took a picture of it, our billboard coming down. So you would think that at the Fox Studios, they could have been like, hey, let's give these guys one more day of you know, their shine, letting them have their billboard photo that is up there. Instead, on the day that we finished season one, they decided they couldn't leave it up for one more day, so they took down our billboard. And I think Cowherd got a new billboard up, because God knows we definitely have to continue to promote the herd. And if he didn't have the whole day Monday, if he had to start on Tuesday, nobody would have had any idea about his show. And obviously, I'm joking about that. But it was an awesome run. I mean, 180 shows, a lot of shows. It was 180 hours of television. And a lot of people who listen to this radio show have been watching and spending their time with it. And so it's just been a lot of fun. Maybe not as fun as the Home Run Derby or the Slam Dunk Contest, depending. We're going to have a little bit of a debate here to start off the show. We got a loaded Tuesday show for you. Going to talk with Alex Marvez, going to talk with John Morosi, getting you ready. And then in hour three, you're going to continue to hang out with us, because Petros was not able to get up with us on this Tuesday morning, so he's going to join us on Wednesday instead. So that's kind of giving everybody a roadmap of where we're headed over the next 3 hours. But it was an awful lot of fun, and I really do enjoy the time that I get to spend in L.A. I have spent a lot of days, weeks, and months over the years, last 6 years with Fox Sports, doing a variety of different things, and the Lock It In television show is about as much fun as I've had on the lot, and I've had a lot of fun. And so that's exciting to think about, the fact that we're going to get season two And hopefully, obviously, we got a lot of years left in the radio show and everything else. But getting to do radio and television is really, you know, kind of a dream come true for what I would have hoped to be able to do one day. And so, honestly, I kind of love every minute of my day, except the part where my alarm goes off super early in the morning, because for a couple minutes there, I definitely think, what in the world are you doing? But once the show gets rolling, I definitely think I've made the right decision.
So Vlad Guerrero and Joc Pederson put on a show last night in the second round of the Home Run Derby, 40-39. Vlad goes up there, hits 29 in 4 minutes, then gets a 30-second bonus time because he hit two of them more than 440 feet. Joc Pederson did the exact same thing. He hit 29, hit two more than 440, and then they got a one-minute tiebreaker, and both of them hit eight more. And then even at 37, they had a three-swing playoff. Both hit one more each. Pederson pulled his last one foul. It went out, but it went just foul. And then finally, Guerrero wins 40-39. That kind of felt like France and the U.S., and U.S. women's national team, because it felt like it was over right there. But, of course, it was not, and you could predict what was going to happen. Pete Alonso, another rookie, a Mets rookie, he's able to hit 23 because Vlad's just worn out. Vlad hit 91 home runs in the Home Run Derby last night. Vlad Jr. did. His father, I'm not sure his father hit 91 in his entire career, and Vlad Guerrero was a great player. But the Home Run Derby happens. It's a thing. And I'm sitting here wondering, and you mentioned it just now, Clay, Home Run Derby versus Slam Dunk Contest. These are two events that they're kind of the marquee, even though the three-point shootout has become bigger in the NBA just because the three-point shot has become so prevalent in the NBA. But these are kind of the signature all-star skills competition, the pride moments that you see out there. And look, a lot of times it can be fun to watch. So of the two of these, which one of them do you think works better?
Man, old school-wise, and I'm old enough to remember, you know, the Jordan, the Dominique Wilkins, the Spud Webb era NBA slam dunk contest, I think that is the best thing that has ever happened in terms of a skills competition. And, you know, the D. Brown, Pump It Up, the Cedric Ceballos with I'm going old school.
Blindfolding
now
right there.
Yeah, the blindfold on. All of those things I remember watching live as a kid and thinking this is the greatest thing that's ever existed in mankind. But I feel like the dominance of the slam dunk contest, we've kind of seen everything happen at this point in time, right? I guess it was Blake Griffin dunking over the Kia, if I remember
that
correctly.
That was so not impressive, too. Like, it was not that high a jump to make.
Yeah, you know, like, at some point, you've just kind of seen everything. And so the showmanship element of the slam dunk contest has kind of given up the ghost, I would say. And I think the home run derby is actually the better and more superior event to watch. Now, was it last year we saw Bryce Harper just kind of go off? And I thought that was riveting, must-see television. If I had to choose between the slam dunk contest or the home run derby, I think the home run derby is better television because I have more uncertainty about what might happen from moment to moment. Every year you got a new stadium, which adds a little bit of new dynamics. You got new guys who are swinging for the fences, which obviously adds complexity. And I just think there's more excitement level from the home run derby now than there is the slam dunk contest. You with me or against me?
I'm with you. I think the one thing, the one angle of this that I continue to think about is which one of these things matters after the fact. And I don't know that either one of them does anymore because, I mean, look, I'm a Western Kentucky grad and Jeremy Evans won the thing. But I know that because I'm a Western Kentucky grad. But I look at the Home Run Derby and I think, do I care about baseball because of this event? The answer is no. The sport surrounding the Home Run Derby is nowhere near as interesting to me in 2019 as the sport surrounding the slam dunk contest. So the slam dunk contest maybe isn't as essential because last night, baseball kind of mattered. People on social media were talking about baseball. Unless you've got Cubs Indians, which, you know, we were privileged in our first year on the air to have that as the World Series to be able to talk about, and that was fascinating, but that's generally not going to be the case. And so I look at the time we live in and the condition of those two sports – And I say the slam dunk contest is nowhere near as important to its sport anymore, I don't think, as the home run derby. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think it used to be, and this may be a function of there not being as much on television back when we were kids. If you're out there listening to me right now, and you remember Jordan, and you remember Spud Webb, and you remember Dominique Wilkins, and you remember D. Brown and Sed Ceballos, and
even Vince Carter
and the Blake Griffin over the Kias, like all of that is kind of old school in the sense that there weren't that many other events that were actually taking place. And nowadays, I think that there are so many games to be watched. It used to be that, like, the All-Star game was a big deal because it was an opportunity to watch all these people, for instance, in the world of the NBA and in the world of baseball that you might have heard about, but you didn't really know, right? Like, I'm old enough to remember when you would get a newspaper and you would look at the box score and you would know these names based on the numbers they were putting up in the box score. But other than maybe a little bit of highlights, you hadn't actually seen them play. And so it used to be the Major League Baseball All-Star Game was that opportunity to kind of see the entire league outside of your regional area, wherever you watched your favorite guy play. And now I feel like we kind of have a better sense for how all these guys are going to perform. And I feel like, to their credit, Major League Baseball has done a better job of getting their superstars in the home run derby than the dunk contest has of getting the favorites in the dunk contest. Because it's almost like if you are LeBron, who I think has never appeared in the dunk contest, if I'm correct, all you have to do is lose, right? Because the expectation is, oh, LeBron's different level. If he goes out and he loses to some no-name, then it elevates the no-name, but it doesn't necessarily elevate LeBron. And it used to be in the NBA that the best players were there. I mean, when Jordan and Dominique Wilkins were going head-to-head for the dunk contest, I mean, those were two of the best players in the entire NBA. Major League Baseball, maybe it's because of the prize that they're putting to bear out there, they do a better job, I think, of getting their stars to actually perform in the home run derby than the NBA does of getting their stars to be in the slam dunk contest.
Yeah, I think that that's true. I also think that a lot of the NBA stars feel like they have a lot to lose if they go out there and get embarrassed. And I feel like LeBron has been afraid to be in the dunk contest, which is kind of crazy. Now, if I were him, I would not do it. But the thing about LeBron is, I've never seen LeBron do the kind of dunks I used to see on N1 mixtapes or stuff that I see Jordan Kilgannon doing right now in other dunk contests outside of the NBA. Like, LeBron James is a great in-game dunker, but he wasn't like a stylistic dunker at any point. It's all about his power. So I can understand why he wouldn't want to go out there, because what does he really have to gain if there's all these, I don't know, dudes that are cutting 360s and 720s out there trying to do all of this stuff?
Well, I think you're right. I think it cuts him down. If you're King James and you lose anything, it definitely is an attack upon your throne. Having said that, I don't think Michael Jordan would have ever become Air Jordan if the slam dunk contest doesn't exist.
Yeah, that's right. There's no question that that's right. Another thing that I'll say, and then we'll get to break here. You were talking about the stat lines in newspapers. The other thing, and we've mentioned this on this program before, baseball cards and what they used to mean. And
oh, I was in love with them.
Yeah, we all were. Tops, Fleer, Upper Deck, when the first year of Upper Deck came out. But I
Show
knew
some respect for Donruss.
Yes, yeah, I totally left out Donruss in that entire deal. But, I mean, I remember what the old Tops looked like with the wood grain.
Oh, yeah,
that one
1987.
Year. Yes, I mean, it was just absolutely outstanding. And the other thing, I think, was there was no interleague play. So when the Detroit Tigers would be on TV nationally,
point.
It's like, yeah. What sorcery is this? Is this Major League Baseball? Because you got used to watching a few teams. So I think all of that probably stands out. Coming up next, we're going to shift gears. We're going to talk to Alex Marvez. Alex Marvez, NFL right now, there's not a ton going on, but Alex Marvez is going to find a way to make it interesting anyway. He finds stories where there aren't stories, and he'll join us next.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Geico Outkick Studios. Bring in our NFL expert. He is Alex Marvez. He joins us now. Alex, I know that you are probably like many people who are listening to us ecstatic for the football season to eventually return. We're not very far away from the start of the NFL training camp season, at least. What to you is maybe the two or three things that you are most excited to see with training camp opening?
Ooh, I want to see how the New England Patriots, and we're not going to find out in training camp, but I want to see, number one, what this Patriots offense looks like in 2019. Clay, no Rob Gronkowski. They didn't draft a tight end. Huh? What? And the guy that they signed, you know, they signed Ben Watson and Austin Seferian Jenkins as big-time free agents, and neither is going to be available in week one. Watson serving a four-game PED suspension, and Austin Seferian Jenkins already released. So, you know, what's this offense going to look like? I mean, beside Julian Edelman, I mean, who's really established as a pass catcher? Is Josh Gordon on the cusp of coming back that we don't know about it? I'm sort of fascinated by that. But, look, quarterback battles are always a big thing, right? So let's look at the one, Miami. Is it a failure if Josh Rosen doesn't start week one? I wouldn't say that necessarily. Ryan Fitzpatrick's a veteran guy who may pick up the system better. But if you don't get a good read on Josh Rosen by the end of the 2019 season, then it's a failure for the Miami Dolphins. And it's a real, you know, indication that Josh Rosen is never going to become a full-time bona fide NFL starter. This is his time to shine in 2019. What's going to happen in Washington, D.C.? You've had Joe Theismann go on record as saying Dwayne Haskins should sit for a year. But is Case Keenum really going to get you into the playoffs? And that's what Jay Gruden figures. Is it playoffs or bust for his team? And do you go with Haskins? I mean, he's had experience developing a young quarterback. Think about what he did with Andy Dalton back in 2011. And it helped parlay Jay into the Washington Redskins head coaching job. Jay was a great offensive coordinator for Cincinnati. So I'm curious about that battle. And is really the situation with the New York Giants, are we really looking at Daniel Jones being able to push Eli Manning in 2019? And would the Giants consider a Daniel Jones package? Maybe a little bit of read option, maybe some things that Eli doesn't do on offense in terms of mobility. Daniel Jones has wheels, man. He ran a 4.7 40, not only at the combine, but what does this tell you, Clay? The guy actually ran it again at his pro day. Like, he could have sat on that number and been great, but he wanted to show NFL scouts that he was worthy of being picked high, and obviously going at number six of the Giants, he hit a home run. So I think those are some of the things, and of course, as we speak about often here on the Clay Travis Show, Outkick the Coverage, Tyreek Hill. Ultimately, how much time is he going to be missing in 2019? And my sources tell me, honestly, it may not be that much at all. It may just be, you know, a couple of weeks. And the feeling is that Tyreek Hill, that maybe some of the media reports out there about him aren't accurate in terms of, you know, what actually ended up going down with his fiance. I heard the audio like you. I thought it was a terrible look for Tyreek Hill. It's a terrible look for the Chiefs if they continue to keep him on their roster, at least for the short term. And, you know, the NFL as well is going to be, you know, motivated to act with some sort of punishment toward Tyreek Hill. But apparently the Chiefs not only buy into this, and this has been reported, I want to give credit to, you know, Yahoo Sports and The Athletic, they've said it and they're not wrong. The Chiefs actually would consider extending Tyreek Hill's contract, you know, this, you know, moving into the regular season, because they believe that what was reported isn't nearly as violent or as awful as what was said, or at least Tyreek Hill isn't involved as much as been said publicly, you know, reported. So big twist there. But those are some of the things that I'm following.
All right, let's talk about something that has been decided in terms of discipline. Ezekiel Elliott not going to face any suspension at all for the Las Vegas parking lot of an EDM concert, I think it was, incident where he bumps into a security guard. Security guard may have flopped a little bit like LeBron in the postseason, or some soccer players even. What do you think about that resolution? How firm are the Cowboys in their commitment long range in your mind to Ezekiel Elliott, given that, look, I know they defended him when he got his six-game suspension, but he hasn't exactly been a picture of perfection when it comes to his off-field behavior.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, if Jerry Jones is in your corner, I mean, you're fine, right? Randy Gregory, Dallas Morning News reporting, he's applying, you know, to participate in training camp. How much of the Cowboys stuck by Randy Gregory? He has failed 4 substance abuse tests. Josh Brent last week, a man who killed a teammate, vehicular manslaughter, driving drunk, was given a job in the Cowboys scouting department in an attempt to rehabilitate himself, falls off the wagon, public intoxication, gets tasered by the police. He's drunk in the middle of the day, Clay, and the Cowboys haven't fired him. I mean, they'll give you a long leash in Jerry World. So with Zeke Elliott, yeah, they're disappointed. The big thing is, does he show up on Sundays? Does he produce? That's really, in Jerry's world, what matters. and they just hope that the guy grows up. And Zeke Elliott said all the right things in the statement that he, you know, released following his meeting with Roger Goodell. And to the NFL's credit, they didn't make the young man sweat it. I think that they felt like you did, that maybe this wasn't that big a deal and maybe security overreacted. But it is a warning sign for Zeke Elliott, you know. And they also know, too, through NFL security, through Cowboy security, how is the guy living his life? Is he in the club? Is he, you know, is he doing things that, you know, off the field that he, you know, put him at risk as far as giving him tens of millions of dollars in guaranteed money as part of a contract extension? Cowboys have a pretty good idea about that. He is third in the pecking order to me, and may even be fourth in terms of contract extensions, because he's got two more years left on his deal. Dak Prescott one, Amari Cooper two, and they may move on from Amari in terms of just realizing they may have to franchise tag him. Depends upon how rich the receiver market gets this offseason, because Michael Thomas is negotiating a new deal, Julio Jones, A.J. Green, etc. But Byron Jones set to become an unrestricted free agent. Do the Cowboys want to keep him? Lyle Collins, the right tackle, do they want to keep him? So, you know, for Zeke, I think that because of this situation, he may have moved back in the pecking order, and the Cowboys just say, listen, live life good off the field. We're going to ride you in 2019. And also find out, what do they have in Tony Pollard, the fourth-round pick out of Memphis? Clay, this was a guy who really had a chance to do some nice things when Darrell Henderson, the running back taken in the third round by the Rams, declared himself pro and decided not to participate in their bowl game. I mean, Henderson had a chance to play and looked every bit the part of a guy who can contribute. There are comparisons made with skill set, and it's not production right now, but skill set to Alvin Kamara. So the Cowboys are really excited about this guy. Zeke has a legitimate backup. If this guy looks great, well, do they reconsider some things in 2020 and beyond? Still to be played out. But long story short, Zeke Elliott, good news for him. He'll be with the Cowboys. And one more thing, I am very bullish on the Cowboys this season. Clay, this roster is the best one that Jason Garrett has had a chance to work with since he became Cowboys head coach midway through the 2010 season.
You mentioned Dak and contract decisions with Dak. Where are those headed? Do you think that he's going to get $30 million plus? Has that basically been decided in Jerry Jones's mind already? I know he said publicly, even before the Cowboys got on their good run last year, that Dak would be extended. And what kind of contract numbers are we looking at for him?
Well, Carson Wentz set the stage, right, at $32 million, but Carson Wentz also had the luxury of knowing, and that $32 million a year average is what I'm referring to. But, you know, the thing is that Carson was also being paid commensurate to a contract of a first-round player, the number two overall pick in his draft class. Not so much with Dak Prescott. He's set to make $2.5 million this year. That's, you know, the question becomes for him, do I hold out for an extra $3 or $4 million a year extra on the average, but also knowing that I'd be in a giant hole if I try to get to the franchise tag? Because that's where it's going with him, right? Ultimately, Dak, and that was what was so big about the Cowboys signing DeMarcus Lawrence earlier this offseason, their franchise player. They got him locked up to a long-term deal. Now it allows them to use a franchise tag on Dak. They need to get Dak or Amari Cooper signed. Those are two players that they cannot lose. I think that Dak ultimately will realize, I'm never going to make back the money if I don't sign a long-term deal. Agent is going to try to leverage it to get as much cash as they can, maybe even some incentives in there that, hey, if Dak is as good as you think he's going to be, let him become, you know, greater paid than Carson Wentz. He just doesn't have the same as strong a negotiating platform because of, you know, when it comes to precedent of Wentz. You know, just because, again, because of that $2.5 million salary this year, the Cowboys could ultimately say, well, sorry, you're asking for too much. We'll play on that and we'll franchise tag you in 2020. So I think ultimately, though, Clay, long story short, he agrees. He's somewhere upward of $30 million a year, and that story takes care of itself, you know, before the regular season begins.
We're talking to Alex Marvez. I am Clay Travis. You're listening to Outkick the Coverage. We're out in L.A., Alex, where the ground has been shaky. But the NBA ground has been wild in terms of the earthquakes that have been taking place. And a big part of why those moves take place in the NBA is there's no franchise tag. You've already right. mentioned it a couple of times in our discussion about the larger NFL decisions that have to be made, that possibility looming out there of the franchise tag existing. Certainly it's something that eases, I think, the burden of, say, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Tennessee Titans when it comes to deciding what to do with Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, who are both playing out the final year of their five-year deals now, having had those picked up, but no future deals. Do you think in the new CBA, which there already is some rumors that, that the Players Association and the NFL are talking about because they want to get this worked out, in advance of all the television deals so that they can at least go to the TV networks and everybody else who's bidding and say, hey, you don't have to worry about a work stoppage. We know exactly what the next 6 or 7 years of this deal are going to look like. When you look at it, do you think there's any possibility the players could be strong enough to knock it out? Because if it did happen, we might see some of the NBA-style free agency, particularly with quarterbacks that we have not seen very much in the NFL.
Well, a couple things about this. First, I want to point out, too, it's not just a TV deal. So it's also a gambling partner.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Good point.
And if the NFL – no, well, thank you, Clay. If the NFL can – you know, before – because this is just such fertile ground. But if the NFL can procure millions, billions of dollars, whatever it is, in a gambling fee, or what they would love to have in a perfect world, it's a 0.5 percentage of every bet. Basically saying, you know, when you get to us, you're our exclusive gaming partner. On all of our websites, we will promote you. During our games, we will promote you. We'll have banner advertisement, whatever it is, but we want 0.5% back of the entire handle. Play it. It's a huge amount of money. And everyone, the PA and the NFL, realize that now with legalized gambling so prevalent that they're wasting time if they don't get a new CBA, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
This year there were 6 franchise players. 6. We have 2,000 players in the union, right, at the start of camp. You know, they come and go, but that's the NFLPA. For 6 players, the NFLPA, the franchise tag is whatever. They get it. And that's something initially in 1993 when NFL owners, they were obstinate. It was like, we are not negotiating the franchise tag. We need to be able to retain our best players. And the PA had agreed, you know, maybe over other concessions, whatever. I just don't think that's going to change. I don't think you're going to see it where the PA, again, over a handful of players among almost 2,000 active members, is going to say, no, we're not going to play football because you won't bend on the franchise tag, and make it so that it's only quarterbacks, or even just eliminate the franchise tag altogether. That's just how it is. You know, it's just not – the die has been cast in this regard. Kudos to the NBA players for getting it the way that it is, because it's changed the history of the game. You know, if you had a franchise tag, LeBron never leaves Cleveland, guys don't leave. Players don't become free agents, Clay, because what ends up happening is you know the franchise tag is looming, so you ultimately sign a long-term deal with your team if the money's being offered. It is so rare to test the free agent market, and you always worry about injury in the back of your head. We saw Alex Smith and what could be happening with him and, you know, never playing it down again. I mean, the guy, he's costing $16 million, by the way, against the Redskins cap this year. $71 million of his contract is guaranteed on a guy over the next 4, you know, has 3 more years left on his deal. He'll probably never take another snap. That being said, I don't expect that to change. But CBA negotiations start to get in on the gambling stuff right away and the TV deals. Yeah, I mean, Roger Goodell's goal by 2025 is for the NFL to be a $27 billion revenue stream, you know, total revenues, $27 billion each year, and the gambling component's a big part because, Clay, they ain't going 18 games. That's not happening.
Last question for you, and we're talking to Alex Marvez. You can follow him on Twitter, at Alex Marvez. What are you hearing about Cleveland right now, and in particular, if you had to take stock or buy stock in one of the second-year quarterbacks? You mentioned Josh Rosen earlier in our discussion. Certainly Sam Darnold, who, even though he's in New York, seems a little bit under the radar. All of the attention being grabbed right now by Baker Mayfield. What are you hearing about these second-year signal callers?
Well, I mean, listen, Baker, he got married, by the way, mazel tov to him, right?
Yes.
Over the weekend. I mean, with Baker, the reason that they hired Freddie Kitchens as head coach is exactly, you know, because of the work that he got done last year as a rookie. And John Dorsey, well aware of that. They could have gone with the unknown. Kevin Stefanski, the offensive coordinator for the Minnesota Vikings, was the other finalist. And they ultimately decided, let's go with the guy that we know. And they went in that direction. So everything with Baker is fine, other than just don't call out your teammates anymore if they have a contract issue. And I think lesson learned in that regard. The big question to me is, how quickly does he get on the same page with Odell Beckham Jr.? But listen, all the guys I talk to love Baker. They love him. They love his attitude. They love his swagger. Guys feed off of it. I mean, he's a good guy. That's the thing. I mean, like, people really believe in Baker Mayfield and that Cleveland organization, which really helps. I will tell you this, though. Keep an eye on Josh Allen. This is a very interesting year for this guy. You know, because he's like, he might be the best running quarterback in the NFL right now in some ways. Like, he is really dangerous. The big thing, of course, that, like it was in college, is raising that completion percentage. And he's not been great with that. But they have added, you know, a group of weapons right now. You know, from John Brown, you've got also, you know, the guy from Dallas, Cole Beasley, coming over. I mean, the running backs galore. They have, honestly, linemen, they might be 9 or 10 deep, Clay, in guys that can make the 53 on pretty much any team in the NFL. They have an overload of it because they went ahead and signed the guys, and we know that the defense is going to be good under Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier. So I'm pretty bullish on Josh Allen. I think, honestly, if you're a Bills fan and your team doesn't make the playoffs this year, you should be disappointed. I don't think they're challenging the Patriots quite yet, but down the road, as Brady gets a little bit older, this one's going to get interesting. I like the direction the Bills are headed.
Outstanding stuff as always, Alex Marvez. Appreciate you joining us.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Final segment, hour number one here on Outkick the Coverage. Glad to have you as a part of the Outkick Army, wherever you might be listening. I'm Jason Martin. Clay Travis still in L.A. for one more morning. He'll be back here in Nashville for the rest of the week, and then I'll be in with Jeff Schwartz next week as he's going to head to Colorado. He's going to be out in Denver, hopefully helping my Broncos win some games. Speaking of which, thanks to Alex Marvez for chatting NFL with us. We will talk more baseball in hour two. John Morosi, our good friend, will join us then. But Clay, one thing that I was looking at, we were talking about the slam dunk contest and the home run derby earlier at the first segment of the program, which one was better, which one was more important to its sport. Have you ever taken a look at the prize money?
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's ridiculous. Like, it was $1 million, of course, that Alonzo won last night. But the total prize money for the dunk contest is just $200,000. Like, I mean, it's $105,000 that the winner gets from the dunk contest compared to $1 million to win the home run derby.
Yeah, look, and if you contemplate how big those NBA salaries are, it looks even more ridiculous that you only pay $100,000. And I got to give credit. We talked about this in the open, that Major League Baseball gets their biggest stars into the home run derby now a huge percentage of the time, right? The guys you would want to see swinging for the fences. The dunk contest, to me, needs to be represented not by guys who are really good dunkers necessarily, but by guys that are really good dunkers that you and I would know as casual NBA fans who want to pay attention at the All-Star game. And so $1 million, to Major League Baseball's credit, look, money makes people make decisions. Whether you like it or not, the amount of money that's at stake oftentimes will change people's perspectives, right? And when you say to a Major League Baseball player, hey, if you win, you get $1 million, versus saying to a NBA player, if you win, you get $100,000, is it any surprise at all that Major League Baseball has been able to bring a lot more of its superstars to the home run derby than the NBA has?
No, not at all. And it doesn't seem like the NBA is very progressive and forward-thinking on a lot of things. Some things I disagree with, and a lot of changes that they look at, I can see the logic in. But if you want to get superstar players who are signing four-year $142 million deals, or in some cases a Supermax deal of $221 million over a five-year span, offering them $105,000 to potentially embarrass themselves seems like an unsmart move. That's why you aren't getting superstars. You're getting dudes that, one, think they can win, have nothing to lose but everything to gain, just because for some of those guys, that $100,000 is worth it. But if you want superstars and household names and recognizable dudes, unless it's an egomaniac who just knows he can yam, you can kind of understand why Kevin Durant's not in the dunk contest, right?
Oh, 1,000,000,000%. I mean, if LeBron loses, it hurts his overall brand, which is why I think in the NBA you have to pay more in order for them to be willing to do it, right? I mean, if you want the best possible show on television, which is what the NBA All-Star Weekend is and what the Major League Baseball All-Star Weekend is, it's rare that we sit around and we say, hey, Major League Baseball is outperforming the NBA in terms of bringing in its biggest stars to put on the best show. This is an example where the Major League Baseball All-Star Game is putting on a better show featuring its bigger stars than the NBA is.
It is, and I also think it's interesting that there's always been that idea of the curse from the home run derby. Dudes swing themselves out, and they remember, like, Bobby Abreu won it that 1 year and then completely fell off a cliff in the second half of the season. So there seemed to be a risk involved in letting people do that. There's almost no risk in the slam dunk, yet you routinely get dudes you care about in the home run derby, and very rarely do you get more than one that even moves the needle at all for the NBA. That's something Adam Silver might want to look at, because the slam dunk contest, I still go back and watch the classic ones because I just love the slam dunk.
Well, and not only that, it's people that you don't have a connection to, and so it's hard to create fandom, right? I mean, if you like look at the names that were involved in last night's Home Run Derby, there are a lot of people that you care about, right? I know you had Kristen Yelich, for instance, come out with a back injury, but there are a lot of big names. And last year we had that incredible performance by Bryce Harper where, you know, he was basically unstoppable. I mean, it was an iconic, incredible television event. And I understand the fear over, oh, am I going to ruin my swing or whatever else? But you certainly shouldn't have that fear at all when it comes to the dunk contest. So to me, this is something that Major League Baseball has trumped the NBA on. They're putting on a better show around their All-Star game. And if I were Adam Silver, I'd be looking around. I'd be talking to my guys. I'd be saying, look, $1 million is a rounding error to the overall NBA from our television partners and everybody else. We need to be putting up substantial dollars to get the biggest stars to be willing to put themselves into the mix.
We got plenty more coming up. John Morosi, we'll talk a lot of baseball with him. All-Star game is tonight. Hour two, Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Live from the Geico Outkick Studios. Appreciate all of you spending your Tuesday with us. A lot of different stories we are tracking as we move closer and closer to the All-Star game tonight, which is really the only major sporting event on the calendar. But on Monday, we spent so much time talking about Kawhi Leonard and Paul George to the Clippers that we really didn't unpack what I think is an incredibly interesting storyline, and that is the outcome of the Women's World Cup. And in conjunction with that, what we saw in the Gold Cup match between the United States and Mexico, it was interesting because if you are a soccer fan, you had the opportunity to sit down on Sunday and start off your morning watching the U.S. women and then follow it up by watching the U.S. men play. And a lot of people out there, you know, their natural reaction, and I think it's an intriguing one, is to kind of compare the relative status of the U.S. men's national team and the women's team. I'm going to start with this. That's really kind of a fool's errand, right? Our women dominate because our women have global rights that do not exist for many women in the rest of the world. The Women's World Cup is only 24 teams. They're talking about expanding it to make it 32, but they've only recently expanded it from beyond 16. The reason why our women dominate relative to other women in the world is because the United States is an insanely wealthy country, and because we are able to give our women opportunities and assets that frankly don't exist anywhere else, because we have the resources and the money for a lot of American families to pay thousands of dollars a year for women's travel soccer when a lot of places in the rest of the world don't even have the resources to get their daughters into school, period. So the men, by and large, worldwide, the best talent is able to be found for men's sports because there's a lot more money in it. And so the other part of this, as opposed to looking at the overall status of the men and the women, is trying to assess the relative quality of play of the men and the women. And the thing that I would say about this, and then the quality of play also ties in with pay. And there's I know that when the women won, there was a lot of chants about equal pay and everything else. Well, I don't know why there's not more time spent on analysis of the market factors. Let me give you an example. Nobody out there who is a fan of the NBA is arguing that WNBA players should be receiving the same pay as men, right? Because there are a lot more people who care about men's basketball than women's basketball. Worldwide, most of the money that teams receive to play in the World Cup come as a part of this breakdown, right? The FIFA dollars that are brought to bear are distributed to all the different teams. So, the reason why the men make more money than the women is because the men's World Cup produces orders of magnitude more. The most recent number that I saw, and it may be different for this year because certainly the overall interest for the Women's World Cup is increasing, and that's great for the sport overall. The most recent number I saw was that the Men's World Cup produces in the neighborhood of $4 billion a year in revenue when they're doing the World Cup every 4 years, $4 billion. And that the Women's World Cup had produced around $80 million. And that the women were actually receiving a higher percentage of the revenue that was produced by the Women's World Cup for winning a title than the men were. I think the women were receiving 13% of the revenue in terms of championship money and payment, and the men were receiving around 9%. Now, the Men's World Cup produces an awful lot more revenue, and they're talking about expanding it as well. So one of the big issues here is that we are talking about a global sport, and the way the globe values men's soccer as opposed to women's soccer is completely different. If anything, I hate to see people immediately latch on to this idea of unfairness and people being upset about it, because if anything, our women are the global standard by which women's rights should be brought to bear everywhere. And if you've heard me talking about on this show, a lot of times in the Women's World Cup, you can just look at the overall freedom that women have in their countries as a rough approximation of whether or not that team's going to win. Because, and we had this discussion, in Iran, women were just allowed last year to actually be able to attend soccer matches in the country. The women who play on the Iranian soccer team have to wear pants and they have to wear hijabs where only their eyes are visible as members of their team. Is it a surprise that when you consider those overall lack of rights that the U.S. women would be able to dominate against very many countries because we just have rights that they don't? This is a larger issue. I also think this whole equal pay for equal work argument, when you actually look at the numbers on a global scale for all jobs, doesn't actually shake out. And we got a presidential election going on, and I think this ties in with it because certainly the U.S. women's soccer team has been intensely politicized during the course of this run to their championship. In fact, I think that the U.S. women's team has accepted an invite to visit the House of Representatives and AOC there, but they're not going to accept an invite to go visit Donald Trump because they have a difference of opinion on politics. We can get into all of the aspects of that, but the equal pay for equal work argument doesn't actually break down in the United States either. When people say, oh, women make 80 cents on the dollar compared to men, that's not true. When you actually consider the amount of years that people have been working on jobs. The reason why women make less money than men a lot of times is because women take years off to have children very often in our country. And if you want to argue that means we need better childcare, look, I'll 100% sign on with I would like a lot better childcare options, because I know when I had my wife working full-time and I was working full-time, we spent more money on childcare to have my young kids in childcare than we would have to have them enrolled in a state college, right? Like my kids, where we live in Nashville, Tennessee, my kids could have gone to the University of Tennessee in college and paid tuition cheaper than they were getting childcare. So like, I don't even worry about the cost of college now because I've had to live through the cost of childcare. And there's a lot of you out there talking about that too. But if you think about it from a pure business perspective, if women were really making 80 cents on the dollar for the exact same work, then the truth of the matter is every company would only hire women because they'd have 20% reduced expenses when it comes to paying employees. So it's just not true. Do I wish that the women made the exact same amount as the men? Yes. Are our women better in the world than our men are at soccer? Yes. Now, don't be crazy. There's a certain segment of the population out there that's like, oh, our women would beat our men. Don't be insane, all right? The U.S. women, as good as they are, got beaten by an under-15 all-star team in Dallas, Texas a couple of years ago, 5-2 in a scrimmage. So, and as good as they are, our U.S. men would be, I'll ask Furman about this. We talked about this on the show yesterday. I said, hey, how much would the U.S. men be favored over the U.S. women? And he's like, oh, it's a massive difference in the overall talent. It's not similar at all. And so I think that has to be factored in many respects. But in general, this argument for equal pay for equal work and everything else that's affiliated with it. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. And by the way, I actually think the U.S. men are on a good trajectory. They lost 1-0 on Sunday night in the Gold Cup, but I thought they played pretty doggone well overall. And it may be, especially with Christian Pulisic, I always mispronounce his name. At some point, I'm going to get his name right. But I think it's possible that he is going to one day be the best player overall in American history that we have ever seen. So I think that, and that's a high bar to put to bear on him, but I think he has the potential to really take American soccer to another level because he has a talent that I'm not sure we've ever seen before, and he's still an insanely young guy. But I think it's unfortunate when we get into situations like this, and look, I wish the women made the same amount of money as the men, but most of the money is not coming from the United States that the men and the women receive. It's from the World Cup, and the men's World Cup is infinitely more valuable than the women's World Cup, and that's how we end up in a situation where there is that disconnect between their respective salaries. Now, one day I hope we can celebrate, by the way, the men being anywhere near as good as the women too, and I do think we're starting to improve a little bit, but the world competition for men's soccer is just infinitely higher than the competition level is for women's soccer. All right, when we come back, we are going to be joined by John Morosi. We're going to break down the upcoming Major League Baseball All-Star Game. I think you guys are going to enjoy that.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back, Geico, Outkick Studios. It's first half of the Major League Baseball season is in the books. We're getting ready for the All-Star Game tonight. John Morosi, our Major League Baseball insider, our expert, joins us now. John, let's start off with kind of some breakdowns of the first half of the Major League Baseball season. And I think when you start with what you saw in the first half of the season and maybe where the storylines are, you got to start with the Dodgers. Who have just been playing lights out baseball in the first half of this season. Are they the best team in baseball as we go to the break?
Clay, they're the best team in baseball by record right now. Of course, they did lose 3 straight to close the first half. It's interesting. Right now, they are the best team. However, I look at the Yankees, and the Yankees now have the best record in the American League and are barely behind where the Dodgers are right now in terms of overall record. And with the Yankees, as you look at their club and the fact that I believe they'll get healthier as the year goes on and probably get even better by improving just internally once more of their players are back healthy and contributing, most especially Giancarlo Stanton and Dylan Betances as well, this team, I think the Yankees eventually will be the best team. And we know, of course, both teams are likely to make some upgrades here at the trade deadline, which, by the way, is only one uniform trade deadline this year on July 31st, which I think really will add a lot of intrigue to the coming weeks and the trade deadline. But in general, I think right now, Clay, you're right, the Dodgers are the best team in baseball in the first half. But they have some flaws. That the bullpen is not quite as deep as we have seen in the past with Kenley Jansen. Again, his dominance has waned a little bit here in the last year or so. So I would say the Dodgers right now, yes, the best team, but I see the Yankees as gaining ground rapidly, and I believe that they have a very good chance to pass up the Dodgers in due time as well.
One of the biggest surprises as well has been the young Atlanta Braves and just how impressive they have been early part of this season. They've opened up a 6-game lead in the NL East. Is that going to hold in your mind? Do you think the Braves, maybe a little bit ahead of expectations, are going to be in the playoffs again?
I think they will. They've got the best run differential in that division. In fact, the best run differential of any NL team besides the Dodgers, which is really, at this point in time, a pretty good gauge of how well they're playing in general. The Phillies have disappointed in some ways in Bryce Harper's first season there. We thought for a while that they might have been the best team, but they have faded a bit since an impressive start. I think the Braves as well, Clay, they've got a very good farm system to pull from and make some moves potentially to shore up their bullpen and their rotation. I think to me it's very telling that in that division, with all their flaws, and they don't have a lot of flaws, but I think they've got a pretty gaping hole in terms of their rotation and also in their bullpen to add in a bit more experience there. Despite those two pretty apparent weaknesses,
they do have that six-game lead that you mentioned, which is certainly an affirmation on the Braves' part, but also maybe a bit of a damning bit of criticism for the teams behind them, the Nationals and the Phillies. So I would look for the Braves to utilize some of their young pitching in the minor leagues to maybe make some bold moves here in the coming weeks. Alex Anthopoulos, their GM, is known for aggressive trading. Going back to his time with the Toronto Blue Jays, of course, he made the David Price deal 4 years ago. So I would expect that we'll see the Braves make a big move, and I think that will, to me, solidify their place as the best team in the National League East, and probably, Clay, the toughest challenger to the Dodgers anywhere in the National League.
The NL Central is an absolute mess, right? And I mean that if you're an NL Central fan, if you're a fan of the Cubs, the Brewers, the Cardinals, the Pirates, or the Reds, you're sitting around saying, hey, maybe we could win this division. All of the teams in that division within 4.5 of the lead, roughly, as we head into the All-Star break. Who's going to win the NL Central, and is it good or bad to have a whole lot of mediocrity in the same division?
Well, Clay, here's one point on the NL Central that I think is fascinating, and I wish I could remember who said it first, because I think it's just really one of the salient points about baseball right now, is the spread between first place and last place in the Central in the National League is actually smaller than the spread between first and second in any division. So
again, yeah, it's
first
wild.
And last, 4.5 games in the NL Central, that is the smaller than anybody else's lead there at first to second place. So remarkable how compact those teams are. I expect that in time that the Brewers are going to be the best team there. I think they are the team with the least amount of flaws, and also the one with the best close to the majors farm system to make some pretty aggressive moves. I think Madison Bumgarner probably is the best fit there of anybody as a rental piece to help them get over the top. But they're a team that I think has struggled to meet the expectations that they set by the way they played last year. They are, I believe, Clay, a move or two away from being able to credibly challenge the Dodgers or even the Braves, for that matter, in the National League playoffs. But I look at them as having the fewest number of flaws. The Cubs right now, they have really had some system breakdowns, both offensively and on the mound in the last month or so, that give me really some significant concerns there with that team there in the National League Central. So I think in general, I would say the Brewers are the team that have the fewest flaws. But to your point, Clay, it's almost by default. And I would say this, the Cincinnati Reds, I've had people that follow that division closely that say, you know what, the Reds might have the best chance of any to be able to win this division and have a good run in the second half. So because their pitching is so good, Luis Castillo, an all-star, is a name that we should all know. He's been really impressive in the first half of the season. So do not sleep. I know the Reds are in last place, but they're one last-place team with a credible chance of making the playoffs.
All right, we're talking to John Morosi. You can follow him on Twitter at JonMorosi. Is where you can find him. We're talking about Major League Baseball at the halfway point All-Star game on Fox tonight from Cleveland. Let's go into the AL a little bit. You touched on them earlier, the Yankees. Do you think that the Boston Red Sox can get things rolling? Do you think that Tampa Bay can hang around? Both those teams pretty substantially far back. Or do you think this is the Yankees division?
This is the Yankees division, Clay. I would be stunned if by the end of the season that the Yankees are not in first place in this division. They are, I believe, the best team, deepest lineup, deepest bullpen, the rotation, even though they've had some setbacks with Herman being hurt. Now he has come back, though Severino has not even been able to pitch yet in the regular season. So they've had a number of bits of adversity there with their rotation, but they've been able to weather that because Tanaka's been solid. Sabathia, my goodness, you wonder if he would almost reconsider retirement at this point in time. He won't, by the way, but he's pitched well enough to make you wonder if he would. That's been a really nice development for them. Their lineup has been so versatile and adaptable. DJ LeMahieu, an all-star, he in so many ways has been their MVP of the first half. And Aaron Judge, now he's been able to come back and make an impact. It's remarkable, Clay, but it just speaks to the overall depth of this team that Stanton has basically played not at all this whole year, and they have offensively barely missed him, if at all. It's a remarkable story. Brian Cashman deserves a lot of credit for just the overall depth that he has built with that organization, even having an injury of late here to Luke Voit, and they've still managed to find ways to win ball games. So I've been very impressed by them. The Rays, I think that they'll find a way to be a wild card team. I'm not so sure about the Red Sox. They have, I believe, a number of weaknesses there with their bullpen. A lot of concerns there. I think rotation depth also an issue there for Boston. And they have spent so much money, Clay, and so many prospects in recent years that their resources to make a big deal here at the deadline are minimal. So they almost are the finished product that they're going to be already with respect to the deadline, which makes me concerned because you could see some teams like the Indians, the Rangers, make themselves better and potentially crowd out the defending World Series champion Red Sox from a wild card spot in the AL this year.
We talked about the Braves being the best surprise, I would say, in the National League in terms of teams that have come out and played outstandingly well. I think the Minnesota Twins would have to be that team in the AL. They have a pretty decent lead. They've been white hot. They've come back down to earth a little bit, I guess, in recent history. Do you think the Twins have staying power?
I do, especially in that division, Clay. You know, I look at the Indians, and the Indians are a good team. They're no longer a great team. They've been a great team in the past. That they were a great team, I think, as recently as 2016 when they reached the World Series and came within a swing of winning it. But they're a solid team that I don't believe is going to challenge the Twins. The Twins' offense is incredible. They are going to set, I believe, records, runs scored, home runs. All of those are within their reach as a ball club this year, and I expect that's not going to slow down. They are deep in the lineup. They already had a very good lineup last year, and they added the likes of Nelson Cruz and Jonathan Scope and Marwin Gonzalez and C.J. Crone to that group, and you see continued growth from the likes of Jorge Polanco and Max Kepler and Eddie Rosario. So, yes, some injuries of late for them with their lineup, but I look for them to be able to slug their way to a division title. The question, of course, is going to come, how do they handle the Astros if they play them in the first round? And Houston, we believe they'll get healthier with Carlos Correa in the second half. So I think in general we'll see the Astros be a very formidable team once they meet the Twins in the playoffs. But I think the Twins have a very clear path, in my estimation, to winning the AL Central this year.
We're talking to John Morosi. It's the halfway point, Major League Baseball, the All-Star game tonight. All right, and then finally, going through every one of these divisions, the Houston Astros have obviously been on a roll for a couple of years now. Do you think they kind of coast through in the AL West winning their division?
Well, I think they probably will win the division, Clay, but I think the important thing to watch with the Astros here in the coming weeks is they've got to make a move to fortify their rotation. Right now, they've got three solid starters, solid to very good starters, of course, with both Verlander and Cole being all-stars. Wade Miley, a very solid three or four starter. But they're not going to be able to beat the Yankees, I believe, or the Dodgers unless they make a big move. And they might as well make a move, Clay, that helps improve their club for next year as well with someone like a Noah Syndergaard, a Marcus Stroman, a Matthew Boyd, because after this year, Gerrit Cole's a free agent, probably going to be the highest rated pitching free agent anywhere, which means he'll be really demanding a high price tag, and I believe pricing himself out of the Houston market right now. I think he'll be a free agent and probably go somewhere else. Colin McHugh is a free agent. They've got a lot of guys that are going to be entering free agency that will make Miley is one more name, by the way, that will, I think, create a lot of uncertainty for that rotation entering next year. I think their lineup will allow them to continue to compete for a number of years to come. But barring some pretty significant pitching moves, that next wave of pitching that they thought they had with the likes of Forrest Whitley and Corbin Martin has not materialized for the Astros in a way that they expected. And so I think as a result, they are not protected well at the top levels of their farm system. And unless they make some moves here pretty soon, I think they're certainly fine for 2019 to win the division. But I wonder significantly if they're going to be able to be a World Series contender legitimately this year and next year as well.
We're talking to my guy, John Morosi. He's Major League Baseball's insider for this show and many other shows. You can follow him on Twitter at JonMorosi. We have the All-Star game tonight. For a lot of people out there, they may not have been paying that much attention to Major League Baseball so far, but I know a lot of my audience, this time of year in particular, you're looking for your sports fix. What would you tell people to watch in tonight's All-Star game if they are, which I think is very common, a casual baseball fan just looking for something to be entertained by tonight?
Well, we see, I think, in Mike Trout, he's got a great track record, Clay, of being a dynamic player, certainly in this game. He has been on this big stage before. He's won the MVP of this game before multiple times, in fact. And I think it's important for us to point out and appreciate, as Tom Verducci did on our broadcast over the weekend of the Angels and Astros, that Mike Trout's numbers through this point in his career basically suggest he is on par with Griffey, with Mantle, with Mays. He is of that ilk in terms of the all-time great center fielders of this point in time in his career. It's remarkable to say it, but it's true. Appreciate the greatness that we see in front of us. I think great moments, C.C. Sabathia getting a great ovation back in Cleveland. Stay tuned for that. Michael Brantley, as revered as anybody has been with that franchise in Cleveland for a very, very long time. He, of course, now a Houston Astro. He'll get a huge ovation. I think Cody Bellinger in the National League, there is so much great young talent on the NL side. Bellinger, Nolan Arenado. I look for big moments from those guys to really seize that opportunity. I really credit, Clay, the way that this young group of players, in conjunction with MLB and the Players Union, they get the importance of being relatable and fun. And you see it a lot with social media during the course of the All-Star game. They get it, and I realize that baseball sometimes doesn't have that same place at the bar stool conversation of American sports as it was in the past, the great debates that you see that we maybe have about football and basketball, but the players are doing their part. They get it. The league gets it. The union gets it as well. I give a lot of credit to all of them, and I would just say if you're only a casual fan of baseball, sit back, enjoy. Let the young stars of the game today tell you their story, because it's a great story and we've got great people to tell it as well with the young stars of the game today.
Outstanding stuff as always. John Morosi, we will be watching the All-Star game tonight. Many of us will. When we come back, Animal Thunderdome on Outkick, the coverage on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick, the coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. We just teased you. We haven't done the Animal Thunderdome in a while. I've been traveling around in L.A. so much, been so many different running parts. I appreciate all of you who've continued to send us messages, and we got several stacked up here. We'll catch up with it later in the week. I'll be back in Nashville on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday for the show. By the way, kind of giving you a roadmap of where we're headed. Jason Martin is actually going to join us in hour three. Usually we have Petros Papadakis there, but Petros is going to join us on Wednesday in hour three. Want to let everybody know. But it is time for the segment that sweeps the nation, that has had everybody running around waving their arms like crazy. It's Animal Thunderdome. Cue the music.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just glad I was there.
Boys and girls.
I thought he thought I was like this ginormous piece of chicken.
Dying time's here.
I have a boa constrictor stuck to my face.
Ma'am, you have a what?
This is Animal Thunderdome.
You know, we've had a lot of stories about bears over the years. Bears that behave badly, bears that behave well. You never know exactly what might happen in the bear universe. But I've never really seen this before, or at least if I have, I don't remember seeing it before. This is the opening of the story coming out of Boulder County, Colorado. A, quote, delinquent bear had a bit of fun in Boulder County this 4th of July, and it didn't involve fireworks. The Boulder County Sheriff's Office said a bear pulled open an unlocked driver door, climbed in. Unfortunately for the bear, the door closed behind the bear. The bear then worked on digging through the car, but apparently his butt shifted the car into neutral. The car then rolled back off the driveway 100 feet with the bear in the driver's seat and ended up swiping a tree before the car came to a full stop. That was enough. When the car hit the tree, the door popped open and the bear left the scene of the crash. There are pictures out of the Boulder County Sheriff's Office. The bear did some work in this car. I am headed to Denver next week. It's where I'm going with the family. We're going to go up to Boulder, I think, or maybe not Boulder, maybe Vail. I'm not sure. My wife's got everything planned, but it should be a fun week. But I am definitely going to lock our doors and not allow a bear to run rampant over everything there. That's a pretty wild story. You don't expect to see a bear in the driver's seat. I wish we had video of this, of the bear. I would think the bear was probably panicking as the car drove down. I saw another picture. I tweeted this out on July 4th of a bear in the Gatlinburg area that just opened a car door.
Oh, yeah.
Like, bears are getting smart. They can open car doors, like sliding doors and everything else, if they think there's food inside. So the bear universe and its everlasting war on humans continuing. What else you got for me?
You're going to love this update. That Alabama man a few weeks ago that we talked about who fed meth to his squirrel?
The meth squirrel, if you missed it, there was a drug-dealing Alabama man who had a meth-fueled attack squirrel that he kept in a cage. When he needed to, he could call it out to attack people. What is the latest on that?
Well, back then, we had a mugshot of him because, obviously, this guy's been arrested before, and we tweeted it that morning. His cohort was arrested at the drug house. He wasn't, though. He got away. Well, he's been arrested. Mickey Polk was arrested after he hit a car belonging to authorities while traveling on a stolen motorcycle.
That's a tough combo.
The Limestone County Sheriff's Office in Athens announced this past Thursday night, last week, LCSO narcotics investigators were conducting surveillance at America's Best Value Inn in Killen, Alabama. Sounds like a place he'd hang out. He left on a stolen motorcycle. After a brief pursuit, Polk rammed an investigator's vehicle and was arrested. So,
the key part here, which you're missing, is that the name of the squirrel has been uncovered.
Oh, yeah. I saw this tweeted, and I thought people were making a bad joke. But D's Nuts is the name of
it. He named the attack meth squirrel. He named his squirrel D's Nuts. as if the attack squirrel on meth couldn't get any better, that story. And by the way, we still don't know what happened to D's Nuts, the squirrel I'm talking
they
about.
They say they let it go. Now, listen, they actually talked to Polk about it. The squirrel was released in the woods, but Tuesday, Polk had posted a video with a squirrel insisting he never gave it drugs and doesn't live at the apartment that the authorities said they searched. You can't give squirrels meth, Polk said in the video clip. It would kill them. I'm pretty sure. I've never tried it.
I kind of agree with him. I mean, I think that it would kill him, but we don't know. Anyway, D's Nuts, the squirrel, has been released into the wild.
So it's turned into a debate now. Did he give D's Nuts meth or not?
Yeah, that's an intriguing debate indeed. You have yet another Animal Thunder.
Oh, you're going to hate this one. A Texas woman shared video of a wall-climbing snake that scaled.
We had that story out of Oklahoma.
It's similar
about
to
the
this,
guy
yeah.
who got bit, like rang the doorbell, and the snake came from up top and just bit the man in the face. And I was like, if the snake gets air superiority over us, like in World War II, we won World War II because we had air superiority over the Nazis. If snakes get an air superiority above us and you start having to look up to be worried about whether a snake gets you, that ain't good.
You're not going to like this. This video she shared, it shows the snake scaling the outside of her home, and it uses its face to ring her doorbell. The security camera footage from her home shows that the snake slithers up to the door at 1 a.m. last Sunday and used its face to ring the doorbell. We checked our ring, and it was a snake, Belinda Munoz told KSAT-TV. You never expect to see a snake ring your doorbell. She said the video should serve as a warning. Just want to remind everyone that it's hot out now and the snakes are out, so be alert, she told KVUE-TV. So, yeah, this is the second story we've had now of snakes dunking on us from above our heads.
It shouldn't be possible. Like, we just shouldn't have to worry about this ever happening where you're going to actually get hit from that angle. But that in and of itself is pretty wild. There are, by the way, so many stories out lately about crocodiles. I feel like crocodiles have increased their overall attack rate on humans. I don't know if there's any data to reflect this. Do you have that feeling too? I feel like we're getting so many crocodile stories.
It seems
now.
Like. I kind of want to blame you too, because ever since you went to that gator,
that
or no, it was a croc.
Croco Cancun down in Cancun on my vacation in February, We went out. We could walk around with the crocodiles. I haven't been as scared of crocodiles since then, even though they obviously are terrifying. But that in and of itself is pretty wild. So is that all of our Animal Thunderdome updates?
That's
right
what I have so far. Now, if you see any stories that you would like to pass on to us, you can always tweet them to us at Danny G Radio and at Clay Travis on Twitter. Just make sure that the stories are current, that they just happened, and that they're legit.
Yeah, we get a lot of fake stories, right? So I need you to use your best sensibilities of whether or not it seems to be possibly true. And also, look at the date. We do get sent a lot of stuff that is years ago in the past, and I understand, like, the way viral stories work, they can start to circulate through over and over again. And, if you can just, like, look at the date, we try to look at those. I hardly have any time to look at my mentions now. I don't know about you, but the show keeps growing, and we love it. And so if you also hashtag it Animal Thunderdome, then we can scroll through and even look at that hashtag as well so that you can see it, that I can see it. But you can tag us. You're at Danny G Radio.
Yes, sir.
I'm at Clay Travis on Twitter. Definitely continue to hit us with those. All right. When we come back in Hour 3, Major League Baseball had the Home Run Derby. Did you stay up and watch the Home Run Derby?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. I think that, you know, it's kind of an entertaining thing. We'll talk a little bit about the Home Run Derby on the show. And also, Jason Martin, again, is going to join us. Jason will be sitting in next week while I'm on vacation. We're headed out to Boulder. Hopefully, no bears will break into our cars. That will all be going on. I also want to encourage you, as we go to break here on Hour 2, Tuesday edition of the show, Wins and Losses, my new podcast exclusive. Make sure that you get out there and sign up for it. The feedback on it has been phenomenal. This week's guest is going to be Dave Rubin. I did it out in L.A. I'm still out in L.A. He's at Rubin Report on Twitter. I think you guys are going to love it. It will be up soon. My name is Clay Travis. Thank you for hanging out with us. When we come back, more of Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Geico Outkick Studios. Why not bring Jason Martin back for the Tuesday edition of the show? Let him to continue to get some reps because I'm going to be out next week, right? Next week, yes, on vacation. Are you sitting in next week for the whole week?
I certainly am.
I'll be out in Denver. As we kind of start to unpack everything that took place, first of all, I want to ask you this. Will you build your night around the Major League Baseball All-Star Game?
I'm trying to find the best way to say no. I'm just trying to get to the answer.
Just want to say it's, you know, early in the morning on the West Coast right now. There might be some executives listening along, and you are guest hosting next week. But are you the Major League Baseball All-Star Game, I think, has the benefit of there's nothing else on the calendar that takes place when the Major League Baseball All-Star Game is going on, right? Which I think helps it in a great deal. As a kid, I loved watching the Baseball All-Star Game. I'm going to watch because one thing that's kind of become fun for me is my kids are getting old enough to become legitimate sports fans on their own and kind of have their favorite players and their own teams, and I get to watch their fandom through the eyes of a dad who remembers, you know, sort of have nostalgia to remember when you were 8, 9, or 10 years old and you were a huge fan of a team. So I always think that that's incredibly enjoyable and entertaining. So my middle kid has become a pretty big Braves fan, and he watches the games. He stays up for them when he can during the summer, which is one of the best things about summer that I remember being a kid is you could stay up late and watch games, West Coast baseball games. I watched a lot of Cubs. I watched a lot of Braves. I was a Cincinnati Reds fan, but you had WGN, you had TBS and everything else. I don't care as much about baseball now, anywhere near a fraction as much as I did. Until the Major League Baseball strike in like 94, I was all in. I think that was kind of tough timing for me because I was like 15 or 16 years old then, and I just had other things to fill my time with, and I didn't have as much time to sit around and watch baseball. But you really, I mean, like tonight, so tonight I know I'm going to be watching it because I know my 8-year-old is going to watch it. Probably a good chance he'll fall asleep watching it with me. But I also think it factors in that there's not a lot else on.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about that. I mean, when you look at the sports calendar, things have changed in the country. There was a time where baseball was so huge, the national pastime argument, that all the other sports were around it, and baseball was enough to carry you through those months and carry you through that summer. The reason why there's a, quote, dead period, unquote, now is because baseball can't carry its own weight anymore because the interest level is just not there. I remember the same thing you do. I remember being able to stay up in the summer. I was a Braves fan. My dad was an umpire. His first real taste of sports I had was he was a high school umpire in American Legion, Pony League, everything else he could do, that was on the side. He made a little bit of extra money, so I went to the ballparks with him and helped him score games. And he taught me to score games watching the Braves on TBS. So I became a huge Braves fan as a result of that. But now I don't sit there and watch nine innings of Braves. I keep up with my Braves via the box score. And so I look at the All-Star game, and yeah, I'll tune in here and there. I'll watch a little bit of it, but I'm not basing my life around it. I mean, I do have other things that are going on as well. I've got Stranger Things that I'm writing on, and I've got to finish that up.
Yeah, what do you think about, by the way, we'll get back to the Major League Baseball All-Star game. I haven't gotten a chance to watch Stranger Things because I've been on the road. I'm still in L.A. right now. Appreciate you getting up early with us here to hop on the show. But it's not as early as we're up over here. But how would you break down Stranger Things so far?
Season 3, the kids are getting older, and that becomes a problem for television shows across the board. When the kids get older on these sitcoms, they fall apart. Now, it's not really happening with Stranger Things. Stranger Things is becoming much more, it feels like it's ripping off more John Hughes now than it is some of the sci-fi stuff that it was doing before. There's some romantic comedy stuff, and there's still, you've still got your villain in Billy, and then you've got a hero in Steve and a hero in some of these kids, and the kids are just relentlessly dumb like they've been from the very beginning, especially Dustin, who has gone from being very, I think, endearing in the first season to being responsible for a lot of what happened in season 2. But it's still got some legs. I don't know that it's quite as strong as the seasons that have come before, and I can see why The Out needs to be season 4. These kids, as they get older, they're losing some of the charm that made that first season in particular what it was, even though I think season 2 is still my favorite of the three. But at the same time, it's still great entertainment. And this is a perfect time for it to come out because there's not a whole lot else. There's Spider-Man, which is good. There's Toy Story, which is great. There's Big Little Lies for the adult crowd. But that's really it. Like, there's not anything else scripted on TV. So Stranger Things comes out at the perfect time at the start of July when people are trying to find new stuff to binge because there's not actual fresh content on TV people are watching.
Yeah, we're talking to Jason Martin. You can follow him at JMartZone. He'll be sitting in without me next week as I'll be on vacation. I'm still out in Los Angeles here. You just mentioned the Spider-Man movie. How good is it? I'm going to take my 4-year-old when I get back to Nashville later tonight. I'll probably take him on Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah, I gave it a B+, a B or a B+, depending on my mood. I thought it was good. I thought the first 25 minutes meandered and screwed around a little bit too much for my taste. They were trying to be cute and clever and funny, and I think it worked. And then once it finally hit, it hit well. I thought Gyllenhaal was a very effective character that they needed. I would say the first 20, 25 minutes are a bit of a wash, and then the next hour and 40 is pretty relentless and well-paced. And even though there are pieces of it that are cheesy, I think that the villain was very well handled and believable, and I like the motivations behind the villain. They got it right based on the comics in most respects, I would say. And then, without giving anything away, this is one that you absolutely can't leave until the credits are over because it's incredibly important to whatever's going to happen in the future for Marvel.
Yeah, when you break down the Major League Baseball All-Star Game, and you were just kind of, we were talking about that. That's kind of the way we began this conversation. What is there anything that could change, or is it just a sign that baseball isn't necessarily the same national story? Because I will say this: I mean, there's a lot of talk about baseball from the perspective of all the different attention that baseball gets. But in general, there's a lot of regional interest. There's just not great national stories. And I think that's where baseball, the All-Star Game, suffers, because I don't really care that much about anything other than my favorite team. And I think that's generally the perspective. Like, there's no national baseball fan by and large.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think one of the reasons is the season is so daggone long. I mean, 162 games. That means that every game you're watching is about as important as one 162nd. That's my basic math. Whereas a football season, every game is 1/16. So each one matters. in baseball, even though you sometimes come down to a play-in game at the end where it's that close for somebody to get into the postseason, it's just hard to make me care because these teams play a million times a season, not to mention these games are long. I don't think the sport's going the way of the dodo. Like, I don't think we're going to see this become horse racing or something to that effect. Baseball is always going to have an audience, but it's skewing older and older. I don't know that the young fans, I think your son, Clay, your middle child, is more the aberration than the rule at this point. Maybe that could turn around. There are some young guys that you do maybe want to tune in and see. There's nothing about baseball that makes me want to sit down and watch nine innings anymore. It's still a fun thing to go do live, but it's just not something that attracts me on a television perspective.
Yeah, and I think it's intriguing, and we've kind of hinted around this a lot, but you mentioned Stranger Things, you mentioned Big Little Lies, you mentioned Spider-Man. I feel like it used to be that in the summer, everything was reruns, right? And you think back to when we were kids growing up, you'd be home, and it wasn't like you could sit around and look forward to TGIF. It wasn't like there was something brand new coming out. Now, the summer blockbuster obviously was a thing if you were going out to the movie theater yourself. But in terms of original, fun, live content, WGN with the Cubs, TBS with the Braves, whatever other games you might be able to find, it wasn't like there was that much new, right? Like, you probably, if you were anything like me and you're home for the summer by yourself all day, you watched a lot of old reruns, right, of shows that your parents might have liked. I remember watching a lot of, TBS, The Brady Bunch, Andy Griffith. You know, like, there were a lot of shows that were old school. And then you might be able to see reruns of the shows that were not that old, but, you know, like the Family Ties of the world. But there wasn't that much new. And now I feel like all day long, every day, we are constantly assaulted by new viewing options, many of which are incredible. And I can't be alone in being so busy with young kids and everything else that it's often that I have stuff stacked up in my DVR that I just can't get to. And there are shows that I've already started that I know I like. Like, I just finished Billions recently, and I like Billions.
Yeah.
But Game of Thrones I had to watch live because it was, you know, there's only six episodes, and I knew how much of an iconic moment that was going to be, even if the season wasn't very good. There's a ton of new, and I think baseball and sports in general now are having to compete with so much that's brand new that it's hard for it's just a lot different than when we were kids.
Yeah, I mean, same thing as everybody's got a podcast, so how do you make yours stand out unless you have some kind of just gigantic audience built in before you start that podcast? It's going to be attrition. It might take 5 or 6 years for you to have 100 people actually find your podcast, and you've got to keep on doing it. I think that there is definitely something to be said for the fact that the networks, their seasons would end in the start of May. And that's still the case. And then any new shows that would happen during the summer, and this is also still the case, are burn-offs from the network that they don't think can hack it during the regular season. So they do what's called burning them off. They will burn those episodes through thinking that thing's not going to get renewed, thinking it's, you know what, this didn't work. So here's 10 episodes of it, and we're going to move on. Now, I think I've given this quote before on this show, or this stat before, rather, that I think it was 3 years ago, there were over 550 unique scripted shows across television and streaming platforms back in 2016. And it's only grown since that point. The other thing that has changed is movies can be released on all these different platforms at any time. Whole seasons are released, so everything has shifted. The big television night used to be Thursday. Why is that? Because all the movies came out on Friday, so the ad rates were higher because the film companies would put their television commercials, their trailers, in the primetime Thursday lineup, so they were able to charge more, so it was the bigger competition. It was a bigger rat race. And then you would tune into Johnny Carson that night, or David Letterman that night, or Jay Leno that night, and you would see the superstars and the celebrities from the films that were going to come out on Friday. Now you got movies coming out on Wednesday during holiday weeks. You've got Netflix originals that are being nominated for Academy Awards. Everything has shifted, but the biggest thing is, it's just a bigger ocean now. Baseball has so much more competition. The small pond mentality is over. There is so much stuff out there. Sometimes you just throw a fishing line in there and you pull out the wrong fish. You've missed 90 great shows. You just talked about what you haven't had time to see. I mean, I could sit here and name 20 things that I wish you would see because I know your personality and I know you would dig that show. I know you ain't got time for that. I don't have time to watch half the stuff that I need to, and that's part of my living is to write about it and be a critic about pop culture. It's just there's way too much content, so baseball has to stand out amongst the crowd, and unfortunately the game is a little bit dull, and so it just doesn't attract the audience it used to.
Yeah, it's interesting. We were talking on Monday's show about the U.S. soccer, right, and the possibility that Pulisic could be the greatest men's soccer player we've ever seen. Right, and I think that's a little bit intriguing. Is he a player that can cut through the noise? Because I think increasingly that's where we are as a society, whether it's sports or entertainment in general. In order to get somebody to watch, like Tiger cut through the noise, right? Like he got people who didn't otherwise care about golf to come in and start paying attention to golf, and he still does it. And I think he's elevated the sport around him. Is it crazy to think that Pulisic could be that for soccer? Could he be a enabler in the sense that people are going to start paying attention to him?
I mean, I don't know. I guess it depends on to what degree you believe, because how do you become transcendent and be the kind of figure that you're describing? Well, you've got to be really good. That's something Pulisic seems to have. I mean, the one guy that we continually forget about when we talk about this guy's going to be the guy for American soccer is Freddie Adu.
Oh,
we talked about Freddie Adu,
but
it looked like
fair,
that was going to be a thing, and it didn't work, and he just wasn't good enough.
Yeah,
the hype machine didn't match up with the actual ability.
Yeah, there's no doubt, and that's why I was a little bit nervous about Pulisic, although I do think that people learned their lesson, because I think Freddie Adu became, if I'm not crazy, insanely popular at the age of like 14.
Yes.
And so there was a lot of talk about how good Freddie Adu was going to be at the age of 14, and it just never materialized for him. But I do think that that's pretty intriguing in and of itself. By the way, can you come back to us? You want to finish off the show, the Tuesday edition here with us?
Sure.
We'll bring back Jason Martin, finish off the show. There's a couple of other things I want to hit. We still want to unpack a little bit of the Kawhi news to the Clippers. Got a couple more questions that I want to dive into here. And we will close it out in style, talking a little bit more about the Major League Baseball All-Star Game as well. That's still to come. I appreciate all of you hanging out with us. Encourage you, speaking of podcasts, to go check out either this podcast, the Outkick the Coverage podcast, or if you want a podcast exclusive, my Wins and Losses podcast, which will have every week a brand new guest up. And I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. Long-form conversations designed to make you a little bit smarter. That's the hope anyway.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome in. Final segment, Tuesday edition, Outkick the Coverage. I hope all of you are having a fantastic Tuesday. We are here in the Geico Outkick Studios. Want to remind you guys, by the way, is the summer travel season is ongoing. If you aren't checking out my new podcast, Wins and Losses, I think you're really going to enjoy it. There's a lot of really fun guests that we've had so far. Long-form conversations, limited commercial breaks. If you're in your car, there's no cursing really to speak of. You can hang out and enjoy it while you're on a long drive. You're sitting by the beach. If you're sitting by the pool, you're on a vacation and you just want to hear a nice, smart, engaging conversation about the world of sports, media, business, maybe some politics as well. But so far, we have talked with Washington State football coach Mike Leach, the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, Greg Sankey, Paul Feinbaum of ESPN, Dan Wetzel of Yahoo Sports, Shannon Terry, who sold Rivals and 24/7 Sports, and we got a lot more really good guests that are going to be coming your way. We started off with Jason Whitlock, who many of you have heard on this program before. Six really good, really entertaining, long-form conversations that I think will make you a little bit smarter. It's my Wins and Losses podcast, only available on podcast. Check it out. Again, Clay Travis, Wins and Losses. By the way, the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. I should get as many plugs as I can for them going on Fox tonight in Cleveland. We finished season one of Lock It In. Can you believe?
Like, congrats.
Thanks. But I was thinking about, we were talking about television shows, and I was thinking about during the break, you know, if a television show reaches 100 episodes, it's a big deal in the scripted television universe. We, and most shows don't, right? You know,
that's when you can syndicate. That's when you make the big bucks, when you hit that 100th episode.
When you hit that 100th episode. We did 180 episodes of our show in the first year.
I mean, that's a huge, I mean, that's a big number. You know what? If you were playing for the Golden State Warriors,
they'd
retire
Mike Jersey.
You'd only need about 30 or 40 more shows to get that number retired.
Yeah, they're going to be out of jerseys in a heartbeat there. So speaking of jerseys, we talked a lot in Monday's show, and we talked about it a little bit in today's show, but still the lasting after effects and aftershocks of Kawhi to the Clippers. I think the NBA got insanely fortunate. I think if Adam Silver had had a magic wand, as Kawhi watch continued over the course of all last week, if Kawhi Leonard goes to the Lakers, then we have another dynastic team. And certainly the people who like LeBron and hate LeBron are still going to have a reason to like or hate LeBron. But to me, the way that this is set up now, you are creating an opportunity for Kawhi and LeBron to be potentially the two best players in the NBA next year, playing in the same city, which happens to be the second biggest city in the entire United States, that has a rabid fan base, and it is incredibly beneficial, I think, to the league. I think that if Adam Silver had had the ability to send Kawhi Leonard anywhere in free agency to the Clippers with Paul George is the best possible result for the NBA in terms of interest. Because, again, the LeBron people, whether you love or hate LeBron, you're still going to be paying attention to the Lakers. But to make the Clippers a rival in their own building, to set up Kawhi as kind of the anti-LeBron, he's not the guy sending out tweets all the time. He's not the guy sending out Instagram messages. He's not active on social media. He is the quiet storm, to steal a line that I used on Monday's show. And LeBron is sort of the frenetic energy of the heartbeat of the league that's always providing a brand new storyline. Are you with me that this is incredible? This is basically the best thing that could happen from Adam Silver's perspective.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, him going to the Lakers would have made the Lakers interesting, and that's about it. Him going in the same city, knowing that you're going to play the Lakers as many times as the Clippers will. I guess, I don't know if the schedule's out. I don't think they've put out the schedule yet. That has to be Christmas Day, right?
Oh, no doubt.
Like, you have to do Lakers and Clippers. Like, that would be the most foolish thing in the world not to. But this is what you want. You want this elite-level parity. I do think that you have a lot of other teams that have some hope because the talent is spread out and there's enough otherworldly level talent in this league right now to create that. I think for the first time, League Pass feels like a really good play. I think that even if you just do the five-team League Pass that they offer, then you can get both LA teams. You can get the Pelicans and see Zion. You can get a couple of maybe your squad and one other. The West is absolutely loaded. I think the East is in pretty good shape as well. This is the first time in a long time that I love the NBA and I don't even watch a lot of the regular season, but I'm actually going to be super excited to watch things this year. I think this makes it innumerably more interesting than it would have been had he just went to the Lakers and formed a super team. And I think that this is Kawhi's personality. This fits exactly who this guy is or who we think he is. And that's the whole point, right? We don't really know who this guy is, but he just pulled off a great move. And nobody even knew Paul George was out there. And of course, Kawhi Leonard lands it.
Do you think the Clippers will win a championship?
A championship or this year?
A championship. With yes. Kawhi and Paul George on the team.
Yes.
You think it'll happen?
I do.
Would you make them the favorite this year?
Yes, slight. I think both LA teams are right there. And there are some other squads I like as well. A couple in the East. But if I had to predict it today, yeah. I think the Clippers being the favorites makes all the sense in the world. Slight favorite.
I think there's a good chance that we're going to see some really exciting stuff. And look, I've been critical of the NBA, but I think this is the best possible result. I'm kind of ecstatic. I mean, maybe it was partly being out in LA. You could feel the excitement surrounding where Kawhi was going to end up. And I think it is going to it's going to hit us in a big way once that season gets rolling. Jason Martin, you're going to be sitting in next week. I'll be on vacation next week. Thanks for the help at the end of last week while I was sitting in for Dan Patrick. This is Outkick the Coverage. This has been the Tuesday edition of the show. I encourage you to go download the podcast for this show as well as the podcast for my Wins and Losses podcast exclusive. I think you guys will love it. Thanks for hanging out with us. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.